Caroline, Willie, Deep Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. The Predators fall to the Kings last night, 4-2, their final game going into the All-Star weekend. So I know that one's going to sting for over a week now. But we are just over a month away from the NHL trade deadline. And joining us now to break all that down is Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast, and of Sportsnet. Elliot, I know that All-Star Weekend is quickly approaching. Nick told us, he said, Elliot sounds like he is a kid in a candy store in Toronto this weekend for All-Star Weekend. Yeah.
Yes, as long as that candy involves Gobstoppers and what was that, a bazooka gum with the comics in it?
Ooh, yeah.
And like a little bit of chocolate, I'm going to be pretty happy. You know, Caroline, does not take a lot to make me happy. So you give me those three things, I'm in a pretty good spot.
But Elliot, the bazooka gum turns into a rock after a while, man.
You know, why do you have to be so negative, Derek? Like the first few chews are fantastic, and then yes, you can mortally wound someone with it. But those first few chews are great.
Just like the zebra stripe gum, it's good for about 20 seconds.
Yeah, you need to get like six pieces in there, though. That's what you do. You get like big six-piece chaw in there.
Spoken like a true former baseball player.
Oh, yeah.
Just a big wad of something. Elliot Friedman is with us. Elliot, Barry Trotz was on our station yesterday, and one thing that we've said that we adore about Barry Trotz is that he is an open book. He was asked about a potential UC Soros trade. He said, look, I'm going to need a game changer in return, but I'm going to listen to possibilities. Who do you think could potentially be in the UC Soros trade market as we approach the NHL trade deadline?
Well, I think there's it would be have to be like a young, really good player or someone under team control for a long time. That's the other excuse me. I know there were rumors there Quentin Byfield's name was thrown out about a week or two ago by my friend Pierre LeBrun. So that tells you what you need to know. Is there a young forward? Like that is a difference maker. Like, I'm not saying that like Ottawa would do this, but like a Stutzley, like a Josh Norris. Like, I don't think that Ottawa is doing that necessarily. But you're asking me for the kinds of names that would determine it. Those are the kinds of names: Byfield, young players who could be under team control for a long time, and. You know, I think the other thing here, too, is, like, I went back and I listened to this. There is another subtle message that I think Barry Trotz is sending here, too, guys. And that subtle message is they have to extend UC Soros. And I think they know that UC Soros is deserving of every penny that he is going to get. He has earned his next extension. What I'm thinking is, what Nashville is saying is, if it's a price that they think is too rich for their blood, that they will have to consider all options. So I'm looking at this from three points of view. Number one, the Predators want to keep him, which I think is the preferred outcome. Number two, a young player or a very good player with team control is dropped on their laps. Or number three, they look at the extensions and say, this isn't where we're comfortable going. So I think those are the different forces at play here.
Interesting. And very good point there about signing UC Soros. How likely do you think a sign and trade could potentially be once we get there come July when his contract can be extended?
Well, I think that I think it all depends on what the package is, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like Trotz has definitely signified he's willing to listen on things. He's definitely signified he's willing to be creative. So, look, if someone made Nashville an offer, and I'll say this too, like Soros and the Predators, I'm sure Soros isn't crazy about having his name out there, but they have had a historically great relationship. He has been good for the Predators, and the Predators have been good for him. And I think, Carolyn, in those situations, if it gets to a point where you either get a trade you like or you don't feel you can keep them, then you play ball with that player. You say, you know what, you see, you've been really good for us, and this other team wants you, and if it's a sign and trade so that player can get the eighth year, I think in this, from what I know about this situation, if it was to come to that, teams are generally happy to do it.
Now, Elliot, is there a center out there that could possibly be moved? Because obviously that's what the Predators would be looking for. And I'm not talking obviously about a McKinnon or McDavid.
I understand.
Matthews, one of those guys. But is there another tier of centers that could be possibly moved and honestly moved to Nashville?
Well, I think center is one of the toughest positions. Like, you know, to be honest, there's going to be a bunch of centers that could potentially be on the market this year. Like, you guys last year got a great one in Ryan O'Reilly. He's a hell of a player, and he does a lot of great things around a team. And if you want to follow that route next year or this summer, Derek, there's going to be the opportunity to do that without a trade. There's going to be guys like Adam Henrique. There's going to be guys like Elias Lindholm, who was just traded yesterday. I don't know that Sean Monahan is a guy who makes sense for you. But, you know, and, you know, to be honest, there's going to be guys like if San Jose and Thomas Hertl want a change of scenery, he's a guy, and I think it's too soon to say, but he's a guy who, you know, could potentially be available. But, you know, Derek, as you know, teams don't trade good players unless there's a reason. Something has happened between a team and a player and the relationship has gone sideways or something has to happen. There aren't a lot of those guys out there. Like, teams who have good young centers, they want to keep those players. Now, you know, the one guy that I think is going to be interesting, and if it gets to the summer and he's not signed yet and he has one more year to unrestricted free agency, is Pettersson from Vancouver. But, like, they have a franchise goalie in Demko. So, like, could I see Nashville being interested in a player like him if he gets to the market? For sure. I think everybody would. But I don't know if a goalie trade makes sense for the Canucks.
And now the Predators, they let go of one the other night, well, last night.
Yeah.
Didn't look good last night.
Nope.
They haven't looked good in the last four or five games. They went on a stretch where they were on a heater, and we talked about this earlier, Elliot.
Yeah.
What do you think is the problem right now? Do you think it's just this team has been traveling so much that it finally caught up with them?
No, you know what? I honestly, Derek, I just think, and I know you're looking for, like, really insightful answers from me, but I've been saying the same thing about Nashville all year, and that is that they're a team that is still finding its way. You know, you guys had a great team there for a long time. You got within two wins of a Stanley Cup. You held on for as long as you possibly could, and then you finally reached a point where you said, okay, it's time to try something new. And for all intents and purposes, that was last year. So, like, I think you guys are still in the midst of, you know, finding out who you are and finding out who you can count on. Like, because I come on here, I watch the Predators pretty closely. You know, I see the discourse about players like Tomasino. You know, obviously, you know, I really like Cody Glass as a person. I've watched his struggles this year, which I think are really unfortunate. But I think, you guys have veterans. You know what Josi can do. You know what Saros can do. You know what Forsberg can do. You know what Ryan O'Reilly can do, even though he's new to you. What you're still trying to figure out is, who's Tomasino? Who's Parsonen? I know he went, I know he's really struggled and got sent down, but who's Parsonen? Who's Evangelista? Although he looks really good. Like, you guys are even Tommy Novak, like, who's Tommy Novak? Like, I think you're still figuring that out, Derek. And I think when you've got that, like, sometimes those kids look really good and sometimes they haven't looked really good. And sometimes that part of your roster can take a game or two with you. And, you know, hockey's a 20, and when the game starts, it's a 20-person game. If you don't have 18+2, it's very hard to win. And I think when you've got young players who are still figuring out who they are and still understanding what it takes to be successful, like, this Nashville season has almost played out entirely as I thought it would. It's been a bit more roller coastery than I thought it would be, but I thought it would be inconsistent. And that's, you're inconsistent because guys are still learning what it takes to be successful. And I know not everybody likes to hear that, but I think if you expected, I actually think you guys have been better than I thought, which is a credit to the organization. But I think if you were expecting anything more than that, probably being unrealistic.
That's essentially what Andrew Burnett said after the game last night, which was very frustrating. But he said, if you'd have told me after 51 games this would be our record, he would have said, okay, not too far from, you know, I can work with this. It's still in the mm-hmm. race for sure. So let's talk a couple of things, Elliot, that will maybe affect the Predators. You mentioned Elias Lindholm that just got traded. That's a huge trade. Yeah. And the Flames almost look like they're making the play that the Predators decided to make last year, and that is, let's jump in early. Let's take advantage of the market. So tell me what you think they got in return for trading such a good player in Lindholm.
Well, they got a lot of they got a lot of possibilities, which I think is which is key. You know, the guy who is the X factor of this deal, and I'm going to butcher his name, so I'm not even going to try it.
Jeff I saw Merrick, it. I'm glad you're going to try it because I won't even try it.
I know. Jeff Merrick told me how to pronounce it, and I've already forgotten. I was joking. It's like Hunter, and it's a long name. I'm not even going to try it. He plays for Kitchener of the Ontario Hockey League. So this is a young man who is I think, either leading the Ontario Hockey League in scoring or right up there as a defenseman. And, you know, he got drafted last year, and he's a real talent. Like, I'm just going to move away from the speaker. He's a really talented kid, and he's the guy in this deal. Like, Vancouver has to make this deal. They're trying to win the Stanley Cup, but he's the one guy in the deal that Vancouver trades that they know that's the one they could look back and say, boy, that was the one that really hurt us in this deal. They get a first round pick. It's probably a late first rounder. The guys in our place who know the prospects say there's a drop in the draft around 20. Like, so if you're Vancouver and say you're picking 28th, you're taking the risk of giving up that pick. You know, Calgary will take another first round pick. They've got to build up their prospect base. But that kid, the one for the defenseman from Kitchener, he's the one here that people are going to be watching, because he's the one here who probably determines the outcome of this trade for the Flames.
And so we'll see if the Flames can stay in the race doing this, or do you think there's a couple more trades that they will keep maybe weakening their roster in terms of veteran players?
I think they're going to still continue to tweak. I think that, well, Noah Hanifin has to make a decision. They've got an offer on the table. Earlier in the year, I thought he was going to take it. He waffled. They lost a few games. He wasn't sure. I think they've gone back and forth. They need him to make a decision. And I think that soft deadline, I guess I'd call it, Willie, is coming soon. So he has to make a decision. Chris Tanev, I think he's going to be dealt. I think there's a ton of interest in Tanev. And, you know, I think he's going to get dealt. And the goalie Markstrom, you know, he has a no-move clause, and he's one of those guys, he does not like his name being out there. And, you know, some players can handle it. Some players don't like it. He doesn't like it, and I think Calgary is very sensitive to that, and I think that they will I think what they will do is they will only go to him if they get a great offer. And they haven't gotten that yet, so we'll let that one play out a little further.
That we had a goaltender interference last night, and it's interesting because earlier in the week on your podcast, you and Jeff Merrick debated a controversial one. It was involving two Canadian teams, but it was a big-time game. Two really good teams, Maple Leafs and Jets, and they weren't the same play. No two are the same, but they had one thing in common in my mind, and that is the question of when there's contact with the goalie, regardless of how it happens, when does the play reset for the purposes of the review? No question, Cody Glass last night, he got his stick in the glove of David Rittich, and that's what they saw. But I think you could argue that he was clear as Tyson Barrie is about to turn, pivot to the net, and make the shot. So I've never really gotten clarity from the league. I know you always are asking questions about this. it's never going to be perfect. But what do you think of the question of when does the play reset?
I think it's a very fair question, Willie, and I don't have a specific answer for you. To be honest, I wish the NHL would take some time and put out a new updated goaltender interference video. I really wish they do. Like, every time a player is suspended, they put out a video. And I don't think you need to put out a video after every call, but I think it would help if they did, like, a primer on it. Like, that one in Toronto, Winnipeg, and one guy said to me, he said, oh, my God, this is our worst nightmare. It happens on a nationally televised Canadian game because all you guys start whining about it. And I kind of laughed. But it is true. Like, that was, to me, that was a really confusing call. Like I had, Willie, I'll tell you this. I have a rule, and I've learned it. There's a guy named Sean McIndoe. His name is Down Goes Brown on Twitter.
Right.
And he did a big piece a few years ago on understanding goalie interference. And it was a really well-done piece. And the one thing that he said in there that I completely agree with is, if you go into the crease and there's contact, you're basically screwed as a player. Like, he said, like, 99%, it's true, and I do agree with this. If you go into the crease and you cause a problem, even if it's a reset, you should expect to lose the challenge. You should expect to lose the goal. And I generally agree with that. That's my kind of guiding principle. But after that, I admit there are gray areas I don't understand, and I wish they would do a video.
Before we let you go, I know you're in your hometown. The All-Star Game the last several years, in my memory, has been in a much warmer climate of Vegas and Florida. And yeah. They've had this stuff with the skill competition. They've gone kind of outside the box. I see why they've done it. But it sounds to me like in your discussions, the players kind of went to the league and said, okay, let's get back to having some real showcase of skills. Let's put some money on the line. So tell people what they're going to see when they tune into All-Star Weekend.
Well, there's no question after last year in Florida, people were really unhappy with the skills event. It just didn't do very well. And I think, yes, that they went to some players, and the players, especially Connor McDavid, were receptive about how can we make it better. And how can we make it so that it's a better show for the league? Because I'm one of those people, I believe the skills competition is actually better than the All-Star Game. I feel that way about the NBA. I feel that way Major League Baseball is a little different. I feel that way about the NBA. I feel that way about the NHL. And I watch this Pro Bowl stuff now, and I really love the skills stuff. I think fans really love that stuff. And so what they've done is there'll be 12 players competing in a bunch of events like hardest shot, accuracy shooting, fastest skater, and the players won't be doing all of them. Some will be doing some of them, and some will be doing other events, and the winner gets $1 million. So that's what they're trying this year, and it's tomorrow night, and I hope it's a good show. Like, and they brought back the draft this year. That's tonight. I'm assuming there will be no plastic red cups. I think they're a little worried about what could happen with those, but... I do.
Is it the cup itself, or is it the what's in the cup?
It's what's in the cup, I think, is the issue. Yes. Yeah. In Columbus,
could affect people's decision making.
Columbus, they were worried. They did it in Columbus a few years ago, and the players were a little over refreshed. While I loved it, the NHL told me later that they thought it was really close to the line. So they're very, very careful about that.
Philip Forsberg, I believe, Elliot, was the last guy picked in that.
Him and Ryan
draft,
Nugent
right?
Hopkins, I believe, were the two last guys. Yes.
So it's interesting. Philip gets back to the All-Star game for the first time since then. Hopefully, his stock has risen a little bit. He won't be the last guy standing.
I can tell you this. That was one of the deals that they made, I believe, Willie, is that if they get to the last four, because there's four teams, they have a way of splitting up those four guys. There's no actual last pick.
Just these egos. I mean, they're an All-Star and everything, but. You know, you don't want to be that guy, right?
They're not like us who were the last picks. Like, they're not like us in gym class who were the last picks.
All right, I guess I'll take Caroline.
Hey!
Whoa! Whoa! That's the last. Whoa!
Whoa! Whoa! Really? Whoa!
All right, Caroline, you're on our team. Come on.
Caroline. I was on the monkey bars in the slide. I'm not playing dodgeball at recess. No thanks. Absolutely not. Elliot Friedman. Elliot, enjoy All-Star Weekend. I know it's going to be a blast this weekend up there in Toronto. Appreciate you for stopping by, and we'll chat next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great weekend.
I appreciate it. You too. Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. We'll react to what Elliot had to say there coming up next. Plus, all of the NFL coaching vacancies have officially been filled. I thought it was going to be a much crazier coaching carousel than it really was, but all 8 vacancies now filled, none of which by Mike Vrabel. What comes next for Mike Vrabel? We'll get into that. We'll get into your phones. Everything's on the table, whether it's the hiring of Denard Wilson, the Titans' new defensive coordinator, the NFL coaching carousel, and, of course, everything that we touched on with Elliott and the Predators at the trade deadline. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. We're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline Willie D. Mace. 1025-1063. The Game and the Game Nashville app. We are broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Appreciate Elliot Friedman for joining us in the last segment. We have some hockey thoughts in the text line that I do want to get to. But before we get into your thoughts, the NFL coaching carousel has officially concluded with the final hire of the coaching cycle. Dan Quinn to Washington and Mike McDonald, the former Ravens defensive coordinator, filling that coaching vacancy in Seattle. So all these names that were thrown out there that we thought were sure to be a head coach in this cycle. Ben Johnson, he's already said, I'm sticking in Detroit. Bobby Slowick is staying in Houston. Bill Belichick and Mike Vrabel both left out of this coaching cycle. After all that with Mike Vrabel, if you fire him, he's going to get snatched up the next day. That necessarily didn't really come to fruition. So what is next for Mike Vrabel? What is? I would assume that he'll probably be right back in the mix in the coaching carousel going into the 2025 season. What's Vrabel do from now until then?
He's going to travel the world, D-Mace? He's going to just, you know,
collect the money?
Sail around the world? Collect a check?
Collect the money, reevaluate, you know, himself as a coach. You know, go to coaching seminars. He'll go to other teams to see how they do things. I'm sure there are a bunch of things that he's going to be involved in moving forward. You know, but coaching football in the NFL as a head coach is not one of those things that he will be doing. But it's not out of the norm for a coach who has had some success to take a year off and to reevaluate, reassess, learn more, and then come back, fill in, you know, refresh and invigorated and ready to go. This was, I mean, the NFL will tell you, and I've said this over and over and over again, the NFL will tell you just how much you are wanted and how much you're not wanted. They will tell you how much you're worth and how much you're not worth, regardless of what you think. You may think you're worth $1 million. Somebody might end up paying you, like Christian Kirk, a boatload of money, and then you prove to them that you're worth the money, which he has in Jacksonville. But this notion that everybody was just so worried that if we get rid of Vrabel, somebody's going to pick him up in a heartbeat and all of this. He is a good coach, but the NFL this season has told him, thank you, but no thank you. We're going in the direction of more younger, offensive-minded coaches, with the exception of the Raiders, the Chargers, in a sense, and Seattle, who went with, where did
McDonald's.
Dan Quinn go?
He went to Washington.
He went to Washington and McDonald's. So you had half of the jobs go to young, really young coaches from a defensive side. Then the other half went to young coaches on the offensive side. The only outlier here is Dan Quinn. And when we talked about Dan Quinn last, what did we say? He's a safe hire. And that's what Washington got. A safe hire in Dan Quinn. But I don't think, you know, depending on what Vrabel wanted, control he wanted, I'm not sure if NFL owners are willing to give that much control to a guy that hasn't had much success in the playoffs and that doesn't have a Super Bowl underneath this belt.
I would have, that we always talk about the fun prop bets, and we're going to talk to Allie. Mm-hmm. next. You know, the whole notion of prop bets is always interesting to me because you get these. Like, you got one during the season. You probably got 10 of them. The odds are the favorite to be the next Patriots coach. Mike Vrabel, 3-1. Or, you know, something like, but Mike Vrabel was very up there among the favorites to be the next coach of X, especially. And this is even while he was still the coach of the Titans. It is really interesting. I would have bet, if I had to bet, I would have bet that Vrabel would be a head coach in the league next year. I would have lost that bet. Now I'm wondering, does he want to jump on a staff or just kind of sit back for a year, recharge? That can help a coach sometimes reassess himself, you know, get a little more energy. I never thought he was burned out or anything like that. I do see that with coaches sometimes. They just get burned out, and they don't even realize they're getting burned out.
Yeah.
I wonder what he will do. Like, would he jump into a media circle somewhere? Wouldn't that be ironic if he did? Sometimes they surprise you.
An Uno reverse card, if you will. He loved interacting with the media here so much that if you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah. Can you imagine him standing at a press conference?
Is he going to be the alongside third host of the Bussin' with the Boys podcast? Jared Stillman? Oh, man. I would pay good money to listen to that.
And Joe, also, what are you going to do with your hands here, Joe? I'm just curious. Are we going to do something with your hands?
If he does media, they can't have weird hands and they have to think like men. Those are two prerequisites.
Teach me, Joe. How did you do your hands so I make sure I don't do this problem?
I think if you did media, probably wouldn't be that. I also wonder, is he going to keep his home base in Nashville?
Good question.
You know, John Hines kept his home base in, still has his home base in Nashville. Like, Barry Trotz never left Nashville when he let go. Jeff Fisher has always kind of maneuvered back into this area. Yeah. He's here, right? I don't know what's next. These are all questions that will be interesting to see what happens.
Go ahead, G-Maze.
No, I was just going to say quickly, I do believe he will get a coaching job. But I just think this cycle of coaches, they were looking for something younger and proven on either side of the ball. And again, Mike Vrabel is a good coach, but he hasn't proven that he can be dominant on one side of the ball or the other as a play caller.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been the best couple of years for Mike Vrabel. But I do wonder, you know, in terms of Bill Belichick, I would understand some hesitation from owners and general managers, or really just owners, giving as much control as I'm sure Bill Belichick wanted to a coach that's 72 years old. That, okay, we give you all the control. You're essentially our head coach, general manager, and you call all the shots. Well, for how long are you going to do that? For how long will it be until we're going to have to completely start over with another coaching staff whenever you decide to retire? But as far as Mike Vrabel is concerned, we know he wanted power here. We know that he felt like he deserved more say, or at least final say, here. Was that something that he was demanding elsewhere? Like, I heard reports coming out. I don't know how much truth there was to them, but I heard reports that if Jim Harbaugh said no to the Chargers, then they would have hired Mike Vrabel. Like, did Mike Vrabel want complete control in L.A.? Or was that just something that he felt like he deserved here, but was willing to kind of compromise with that elsewhere where he didn't have the skins on the wall? I would lead to believe he probably wanted control elsewhere, but I do wonder what was the turnoff with Mike Vrabel.
I mean, whether he wanted control, full control or not, I mean, we will never, you know, truly know whether that was the case or not. You know, based upon what was coming out of the building here, it seemed like, at least here, he wanted more control in what was going on. Now, did he take that same sentiment to other organizations, or did, you know, other organizations call Amy and talk with Amy and, you know, hey, how is he as a coach or outside of the coaching realm? How is he within the building? You never know why, other than saying, hey, listen, we want a, you know, the up and coming offensive coordinator, young, hot offensive coordinator as our head coach, or the young, hot defensive coordinator as our head coach. Besides that, you never know why, you know, truly why these owners choose to go away from, you know, a guy like Mike Vrabel. Because again, he's not a bad coach. I think Vrabel's a really good coach. I don't think he's the great coach that many have put him on a pedestal to be. I think he has some years to prove that. But you wonder, what was it all just owners sort of shying away, or was part of it, you know, Mike Vrabel saying, you know what, if I don't get that job, then, or that job, I may just sit out a year and get back online once more jobs or better jobs come open next year. It could have been a bit of both.
Here's a couple of things. A couple of people have texted this on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I guess Chase threw this out there. He follows the Cowboys closely. But I thought about them, and I thought about also Baltimore, who's just now lost a lot of their defensive staff. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If somebody went to Vrabel, and it might be that, like, he's not maybe picking up the phone, because I think you can afford to be patient for a year.
Yeah.
After that, you might have to start marketing yourself if you want to just get back as a head coach. But would it entice him if somebody like John Harbaugh said, Mike, we want you to run our defense? Or the Cowboys, right, who just lost Dan Quinn. He's now going to be the head coach.
I believe I saw that Baltimore already had
Baltimore got their defensive coordinator.
They do. Okay, so, all right, so the Cowboys.
Dallas is open.
Is that something that would interest him? If they said, okay, look, we want you to be our new Dan Quinn.
But, I think the interesting thing about Dallas is, if he takes that job, it might be in hopes of Mike McCarthy gets fired next year, now I take over the head job. I don't know if Vrabel would take over a DC job if it didn't have a fast track to a head coaching job, because I can't see Mike Vrabel basically taking a step back without.
But you got.
Go ahead, Dime. Sorry.
I don't think you can take that job. I don't think Mike McCarthy would even think about hiring him for this reason. Mike McCarthy's job is on the line next year. You just went from Dan Quinn, who's considered around the league as a damn good defensive coordinator. And their team played that way for the majority of the season, all up until they played the Green Bay Packers and seemed like they just forgot how to play defense. But before that, this was a top defense in the National Football League. So you can't go from that to a guy that did, when the last time he coached the defense, they didn't look good, and your job is on the line. I don't think you can venture down that road. Now, he may just decide to sit out, knowing that if it doesn't work out at Dallas, you know what? They're going to be looking for a head coach next year. And I can be the first person to interview for that job. I can't see him taking a DC job with the Dallas Cowboys, because if that don't go right and that defense is bad, you getting fired along with McCarthy.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Also, a little breaking news coming out from Ian Rappaport. The Titans are hiring former Bears wide receivers coach Tyke Tolbert. Not sure. Could be Cajun. As their new wide receivers coach. He chose Tennessee over two other possibilities. Tolbert coached with Brian Callahan in Denver and in Chicago. Helped DJ Moore to a career year with 96 catches, over 1,300 yards, and 8 touchdowns. I don't know Tyke Tolbert, but does anybody have any feelings about this hire as the wide receivers coach?
Well, if he, I mean, DJ Moore was a good receiver before getting to Chicago.
Yeah.
I'm sure he helped him out at really, you know, learning that offense and finding his place within that team. So whether it's a great hire, a good hire or not, I don't know. But his first job is to find out, and how do I get Treylon Burks to be all that he can be? That's his one and only job to me this season. Finding out, how can I get the most out of Treylon Burks?
So, Nick, thank you for sending this to us. And yeah, I'm with you, D-Mays, that hey, if you can get more out of Treylon Burks, great. I can't expect there to be more from Treylon Burks. But Tyke Tolbert was with Brian Callahan in Denver from 2011 to 2015. He also coached tight ends at Florida in 2002. Rand Carthon played at Florida from 2000 to 2003. Now, Rand Carthon was a running back, but there's at least a relationship there. So Tyke Tolbert hired as the Titans' next wide receivers coach. All right, coming up next, we will make some bets with Ali Melnicki, our friend over at Zen Sports. We'll look ahead to the Super Bowl next weekend. You can go ahead and get those bets in. Also, no football this weekend, so what else is there to bet on? Ali Melnicki will answer that question for us. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. We don't have any football this weekend. kind of sad about it. But you can still make some money and play some bets. Joining us now to preview some action over the weekend is Ali Melnicki, our friend over at Zen Sports. Ali, appreciate you as always for joining us. So we have to wait another full week for the Super Bowl. But if some people went to get some early bets in, who is your early favorite to win? You taking the Niners or the Chiefs?
I think the world, well, I think anyone outside of Kansas City is rooting for the 49ers just to get rid of the Taylor Swift baggage, but I'm actually leaning toward the under on this one. I think having two really good defenses, especially the 49ers defense, that front seven is very stellar. Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a very low-scoring game. We just saw Kansas City got limited to 17 points against the Ravens, which is another stellar defense. I'm leaning under on this one if I'm going to really pick. I think it could be a coin flip with the Chiefs or the Niners, but I like the total here.
Yeah, I don't think you're wrong about some of that Chiefs fatigue. I know I'm experiencing it, some of it myself. We've got the NHL All-Star Game this weekend. What are some bets that you're looking at, maybe some prop bets that you're looking at for the NHL All-Star Weekend action?
I always like going with the over on this one. This is just a good champion. This is a good All-Star Weekend where people just like to score. It's kind of like the NBA when you watch that All-Star Game and there's really, really defense. This is just for them to go out and have fun. So I'm looking at that.
Now, Ali, looking at, is there any bets for the Pro Bowl this weekend? I know it's not like it used to be where they strap on the pads. It's more so of flag football. But is there any bets on, like, the skills competition or anything like that?
We don't have any odds up yet on Zen Sports, but we're going to look to get it sooner, closer to the event. I'm sure we'll have some up the day of the event. I don't have the odds right now, but they'll be up eventually on Zen Sports.
Now, what basketball games are you looking at? Let's say tonight, the Lakers and the Boston Celtics. Is there a line on that one? I want to let everybody know that LeBron is out, so everybody knows that I'm upset right about now.
Oh no,
LeBron
D-Mate.
And AD is out. Yes, they just said it. And I want to cry. I really do. But beside that, Ali,
he makes me all the way to Boston for the game.
I'm glad it's 152 and not 1152. It could be an ugly
exactly.
show.
Exactly. So what are the bets on that one, Ali?
I'm going with the Celtics to cover. I know it's a heavy spread, double digits, but without LeBron, I just don't see how the Lakers are going to be competitive with the Celtics that own the number one record in the Eastern Conference. So I'm back in the Celtics at home tonight.
Okay, one more quick one before I pass it to Willie. Is there a bet up on the Milwaukee Bucks, how they finish now that they have a new coach in Doc Rivers? I think they're third right now in the East. But what are their chances moving forward?
Yeah, I think that they moved up. I know right now they're about plus 550. That's number three behind the Celtics and the Nuggets to win it all. I've got to be honest with you. I'm not a huge Doc Rivers fan. I think he had every chance in the world to win multiple championships, and he still has that lone win with the big three and the Celtics. If I had to play between the Bucks or the Field, I'm going with the Field on that one.
Ali, you know, we see some of these prop bets. I want to get your thoughts, your philosophy on how to do those. Like, for example, they come out with these from time to time. The Titans are a big long shot to win the Super Bowl next year. Whatever your favorite team is, when people say, you know, I was in Vegas last week, or, you know, I got on Zen Sports or whatever it is and say, I just put a couple of dollars down on my team to win the Super Bowl next year. How do you feel like about those long-range props?
I mean, if you want to wait about a year to cash it in, that's all for you. I'm not one that likes to wait. If I do place a futures bet, I'm at least going to wait till after free agency, after the draft. I want to see what kind of shape my team is going to be in before I make that bet. But I don't think there's anything wrong if you have a couple bucks to spare and you want to put some big money on a big favorite. There's no harm in that. And just, hey, you never know. Maybe you get lucky and they surprise you. I know there were still some teams like the Packers, how far they got this year, the Browns, even the Texans. So it's never a harmful thing to lay a few dollars on a long shot.
Ali Melnicki is with us, our friends over at Zen Sports. Ali, Tennessee, Kentucky going down on Saturday. Two heavyweights in SEC basketball. Tennessee coming off of a tough loss against South Carolina. Kentucky coming off a tough loss against Florida at home. Who do you like in this Kentucky-Tennessee matchup?
I'm taking the Vols right here. I know that this is going to be a really good game that's going to come down to the wire. Like you said, they're both coming off tough losses. I was actually pretty shocked that Tennessee lost on Tuesday night, but you had a bunch of upsets. North Carolina lost. So I'm going to go with the Vols here to bounce back.
It's a popular pick around these parts. Allie, appreciate you for joining us, and we'll chat next week ahead of the Super Bowl.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Allie Milnicki, our friend over at Zen Sports. We will be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company, what's up next?
Be love and love on your people. Peace. Turn all of the lights on.